former member of the public employees retirement system from amounts in the account of the member. And there didn't seem to be any opposition to that bill. And is there anybody signed up to testify on that?
Whoa, wait.
We have a taker, Bob. Open a hearing in House Bill 2401 so Bob can actually say something.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Bob Livingston, representing the Oregon State Firefighters Council. And I just needed some clarification with respect to legislative intent regarding 2401 on Section 5 that deals with the new language as far as when a member requests estimated retirement benefits, and how are you get to define extraordinary cost. And the reason that I ask this is under the current system right now, because of the woeful inadequacies of the technological advancements that unfortunately PERS system has not been able to achieve, certainly I think you could perceive that there may be some problems, because of my understanding is some of the calculations that they're having to do right now are hand calculations, so certainly those could add to a lot more laborious than if they had technological advancements. So I don't think it's your intent, Mr. Chair, or any of the committee members to deem that, although I understand the board will be given direction on that. I just wanted to make sure that until there's technological improvements, even though they're having to do things handwriting, if it's a reasonable or prudent request to give members good information, that wouldn't be something that you would intend to simply charge them for just because of the technological situation that the PERS system's in.
Yeah, why don't we have Jim Boyko come up, and I know we talked about this issue during the public hearing in terms of how many requests and when they would start charging, but it my understanding was it would be a board decision. Jim, can you enlighten us a bit on the words extraordinary cost to the system?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Jim Voitko, the PERS Executive Director. I think off the cuff, if I were to interpret that for our board in terms of recommending fees, we would try hard not to punish members for our own poor infrastructure for supporting the fund and its administration. I think what we would look to is whether or not the request caused us to do something out of the ordinary in the administration or the execution of the response. If it's something that wouldn't normally be in the course of executing the promised benefit or the service, if it in fact is laid out in statute and few services are, then we would be inclined, based on the study that the board did, to nominate it for something that we would put an administrative cost on. It is unfortunate, however, that our somewhat backward nature at PERS because of our poor infrastructure means that if we were to calculate a full cost of anything, because so much of our stuff relies on, so many of our transactions rely on staff manual time, they are more expensive than they ought to be, and it's something that I would hope that the legislature would be interested in hearing about us or from us about after the more weighty issues of policy are fully digested. I don't know if that's helpful or responsive, but
Mr. Chair, I think that clears it up for me, and I'm comfortable with that. And that was my point: is the infrastructure issues that PERS has on trying to get information out to members and whatnot. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, I don't think there's any interest in shifting the potential IT costs onto the employees to try to to calculate their benefits. Questions, Representative McPherson?
Mr. Chair, I don't know if this is a question. I think it's more a comment, really, just to kind of get something on the record, though, which is that one of the things we heard in our last hearing on this bill is that one of the sources of extraordinary costs are overly frequent requests by members. And I wanted to make sure that I wasn't hearing a suggestion or by our silence implying on the record that requests for, say, benefit estimates that taken individually would be reasonable, would never be become an extraordinary cost, because in my mind, the overuse of the system, like if somebody were requesting estimates, you know, once a month over several month period, that I would regard as at some point becomes an extraordinary cost, and it would be up to the board to decide at what point a reasonable amount had been spent.
Yeah, I believe the recommendation in the report was on the, wasn't on the fourth one? The fourth request?
I do remember that figure from before, but I don't remember where it appears.
And that sounded reasonable to me.
Yeah.
Is there anybody else that wish to testify on House Bill 2401? Seeing that no one, will close a public hearing on House Bill 2401. We'll open a work session on House Bill 2401. And I don't believe, committee members, we have any amendments, but we do have a fiscal, which there was a pretty lengthy comments section, and Kara, I believe they talked about the possibility that this could be done at e-board.
You guys don't have it? It's been around in advance too.
In your packet, in the advance packet.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, there is a comment at the end. Let me pass my name down. That 2401.
And I believe because of the effective date, it wouldn't be until January 104.
Correct.
But there was plenty of time for first to be able to react to that.
I will get it here.
You do. Okay. You guys have it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Representative Butler?
Mr. Chair, I'm having just a little problem with a fiscal on a bill that says you're to recoup your costs. How is there a fiscal in that process? The costs are internal, and these are costs that have been ongoing in the past. These are not the extraordinary costs. If anything, it will slow down the request because now members will be paying. So I just need to know where that fiscal is coming from.
Jim, do you know where it came from? I know Dallas.
There's Dallas.
Watching the committee and wondering. Dallas, welcome.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Dallas Wyman, Legislative Fiscal Office. I did not hear the question. I just heard the discussion.
Representative Butler, did you want to repeat the
question? Dallas, these are ongoing expenses that we've already been incurring. I mean, these are the expenses to track down folks, as we've tracked them down in the past. These are folks, or these are an opportunity to go ahead and quote information, regular information that we have been quoting in the past. And if anything, folks, once they realize that their account may be charged for extraordinary services and outside of the customary delivery of services in the business, they would probably slow down the request. So is this already money that we've additionally been expending in the past? How is there an additional fiscal?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the additional fiscal is from updating the manuals, the instructions, public documents, if you will, internal procedures for capturing cost data that haven't been captured, that hasn't been captured for purposes of billing. There's some additional FTE startup for writing communications documents and like. These are one-time costs. These are not the costs, if I may, of the work that is currently being done along these lines.
Mr. Chair, let me just ask this question. In Dallas, we've already had at least a couple of changes already on the PERS. We're going to be updating our manuals, and we're going to be doing those other things. Have you prorated these expenses in with those?
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, no. This is specific to this one, and that's why the caveat at the bottom was that this could be taken care of because of the delayed implementation of January 1. This is to put the notice that there will be a cost incurred that they subsequently will recover either through fees or through reduced demand for these types of services. They can come back, and it's been our preference in the past to recommend not adjusting the budget until such time as the bills have passed and PERS, and we could take a look at how the entire of its operation is impacted by those bills. But the fiscal here says that we could do that, subsequent e-board because of the other funds issues, or if the bill is passed out prior to the PERS budget being heard, it could be discussed then in the ways and means process. There's not, if you're looking at the need to for subsequent referral to ways and means, that's possible, but it can certainly be dealt with later. This is just to put everyone on notice that there will be a cost to a startup cost for implementing this.
Yeah.
Not exclusive. I mean, it doesn't include any other bills that may be in front of you.
Representative,
I'm not sure if that's the answer.
Mr. Chair, I guess Mr. Livingston already had brought us the question of what are the extraordinary costs that would be passed on. This appears to be an extraordinary cost already in updating the whole process to let these folks know that we are going to be charging them. And I think that's just part of my concern, is that I have some reservation about the additional expenditure authority, limitation authority that would be offered in this process to go ahead and extend for a rule process to tell folks that we're going to be charging them for the service.
If I may, Mr. Chair, the authority hasn't yet been granted, nor by passage of this bill would the Act Fiscal increase any limitation and provide that authority for those FTE.
Jim, did you want to say something?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, you raised a good question. There's a $100,000 fiscal on this, or a little over $100,000. The vast majority of that is associated with a system design change. The fiscal assumes that we'll execute these fee requirements by actually automating them into our current somewhat antiquated system. And so that's the basis for this fiscal. There are other potential options that, as Dallas says, we may pursue as we come to the point of actually asking the legislature, if we do ask for any at all, to execute this. And one of those may be to do it manually. Not that it won't be costless. A billing system in itself, you have to measure the times of use, the time number of estimates. You have to send bills out. You have to invoice people. And the other thing is that we don't record the revenue that comes back as positive revenue, do we? That's not something that would be an offset on our budget. We can't record that. So that when we get those fees back, you would think they'd be a direct offset. But we're not permitted, I believe, under state accounting to record those as revenue to us, so they don't appear anywhere on this fiscal that I can see. Is that correct, Dallas?
Mr. Chairman, yes. The revenue, we can't measure the potential revenue, so that wasn't provided. I do believe, however, though, Jimmy, would be allowed to put the reimbursement back into the fund.
But the bottom line is you're only seeing a fairly conservative, meaning aggressive, estimate of the cost side, and you're not seeing any of the revenue offset when you look at this fiscal. So I agree with Dallas that we certainly will work with you to revisit this question as when we come to the time of actually implementing it.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Butler.
Both Mr. Voigtel and Mr. Wyant are absolutely correct. We haven't approved a PERS expenditure limitation for anything at this particular point for the next biennium, and my recollection is we heard testimony relative to charges on accounts that presently cities are already charged, cities and other school districts and so forth, to do their advanced pay program are charged a $600 fee, which you do log that in. So this is not an unknown practice, and it would be handled in much the same fashion. It doesn't offset so that you've got a net zero factor here, but there will be some charges that will be offset. I appreciate what has been said, and I absolutely agree that this will be taken care of in the PERS budget. So I'm satisfied.
Representative Butler, who has the PERS budget in front of their subcommittee?
We do.
So you do.
General government, Mr. Chair.
General government, and you're the chair of that subcommittee.
Yes, sir.
How fortuitous. So you don't think this needs to be sent to Ways and Means that can be dealt with?
I would leave that to Mr. Wyand's opinion, but it will be dealt with in the Ways and Means process.
Well, it does not have a Ways and Means referral right at the moment, so unless the Speaker requests one after it leaves committee, I'm just going to send this to the floor.
Mr. Chair, I would concur that that would be appropriate because the whole budget is is a very substantial budget, as you're well aware, and these are the kinds of things, because there are some offsets, that these can be dealt with. And typically this is what's happened in the past with these kinds of referrals, is that they have not been referred back, because it will be, it may be the opinion of Mr. Wine and the Legislative Fiscal Office that that will be just handled as part of the entire process of the legislative hearing on their budget.
And this does not trigger, I think your fiscal service does not trigger something for cities and counties.
That is correct, Mr. Chair.
And it is a fee, so it's not a three-fifths issue.
Mr. Chair, the non-referral to Ways and Means, I don't think, would in any way negatively impact the ability to first come back to the e-board once session's over.
Thank you. Any other questions for the two gentlemen?
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
Representative McPherson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Wyand, I want to make sure I understand the situation. The fiscal analysis is the additional costs that would be spent in developing procedures and forms for collecting the new fees that we're authorizing. Is that right?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I believe it's that plus the reprogramming some of the system to allow it to process also some of the...
The mechanics of accomplishing those as an add-on to the system that it operates currently.
That is correct.
Another question, Mr. Chair. So if we proceed as some expect we will in the process we're in now, where there are larger changes made in the system for public employee retirement in the state, and there are programming changes going on anyway, and new communication processes going forward to present the different benefit structures to public employees, that all that goes along with implementing a new plan, would you expect that there would be an incremental cost for this change, or would those end up being just a part of a job where there's not an incremental and identifiable cost?
Mr. Chair, Representative McPherson, let me respond in this fashion, that we would be looking at all of the changes, and then there may well be a different approach presented and worked with to accomplish this as part of that bigger picture. So it, in one way, it could be very much dealt with as part of the bigger changes.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Anyone else? Thank you. I would entertain a motion then on House Bill 2401.
Can move to the floor.
Representative Butler moves that House Bill 2401, House Bill 2401, be sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing no discussion, clerk will call the roll.
Representative Barker.
Aye.
Representative Brown.
Aye.
Representative
Pepper.
Aye.
Representative
Corey.
Aye.
Representative
Nolan.
Aye.
Representative
Richardson.
Aye.
Representative Scott. Aye. Aye. Having received the required number of votes, House Bill 2401 is sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there someone who would like to carry an easy purse bill? Representative Butler, would you like to carry this bill?
Certainly, I'll be happy to. Right up my alley. As long as I can say something about beef.
Beef, dry creeks, whatever you like.
High ground.
That's it. And with that, we will close the work session. Representative Butler is the carrier, of course. And we'll open up. What do we have? Public hearing. We'll open public hearing in House Bill 2008, House Bill 2020. And I believe call the... folks forward who are going to give us a update on progress that is being made.
So. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Brian DeLeishmet, recording secretary from the negotiating group. What I'm going to attempt to do today is give you a much more full update on the progress that we've made, without some specifics on the things that are still outstanding. But what the chair had asked me to do was to give you a listing of the things that we have agreed to, So you can see the full dimension of the things we've already discussed and set aside. And obviously, to a certain extent, with this listing, you'll know what's still out on the table, but I'd just soon not go through that particular discussion because we're still negotiating on those. With that, let me just start down the list. Things of general agreement, and when I say general agreement, I think it's until you get the, as in any contract or any legislation, until you see the final product in its entirety, you have to assume that's general agreement rather than full agreement on each point. But I think we, both sides, understand the things that I'm going to give you right now, and barring some major blow-up on some of that stuff, I think this is pretty firm stuff. First is general plan design. There's an agreement under general plan design, defined benefit plan. Point number two, contributions are to be made by employees and employers both. Point number three, the system does not include a money match calculation. I see people writing very quickly. Number four, full formula calculations only under the new system. So in essence, there is no pension plus annuity as there is under number one. There is no money match as there is under one and two. It's just a full formula calculation only. Point number five. It's a separate system. We've all talked about this, but a separate system, i.e., it's a new ORS sections. We all recognize the complexity of the current Tier 1 and Tier 2 system, and we're more than happy to set up a new system that has an entirely new ORS section or subsections that don't interrelate with the current plans. Point number six, plan is for new hires only. It's no surprise, but that's what we have been talking about all along. So the new hires only, we have talked, and I'm not going to give you a date, but we have talked tentatively about some dates for implementation of that. The only reason I would not tell you at this point what the date we're looking at is because it may not be mechanically feasible to do it by that date, or depending on how long it takes us to crank out the actual product and get it to the legislature, that date may need to be changed. So I didn't want to have an expectation that there was a date that was locked in. Next one's going to really surprise you. Legislators are not in the new system. The employers and the employees have agreed that the legislators are not in the new system. So if we want to have a discussion about what new legislators do for a PERS system, that's a discussion, obviously, that the legislature can have, but from the perspective of establishing a new system for the state's employees and local government's employees, we didn't feel that that was our discussion. We were designing a system for non-legislators. Next one is judges maintain current system. The next one is PERS board as independent counsel. Next one, agreement on full benefit years of service. What I mean by that is that there's general agreement over the number of years of service, both in PNF and in general service, to be able to reach the benefit for retirement, the full benefit for retirement. I'm not going to tell you the actual numbers we've come to because obviously that's interchangeable with some of the other pieces. So if some of the other pieces change, then that number could change too. But at this point, there's agreement up on that. The next one is all employers are in one are in a pool for the new system. Let me clarify that a little bit. There was discussion and there's agreement on the difference between general service and police and fire. And so having everyone in one pool, but there will still be a separate calculation for police and fire rate versus general service rate. And of course you would not like an irrigation district to be paying a melded rate when they had no PNF, the same way as somebody that's very heavy on PNF would not get the benefit of the lower rate from someone else. So in fact everybody is pooled, but the dynamic of this is there still is two rate calculations, one for general service and one for PNF. As is currently in the existing system, both one and two, members are vested after 5 years. No change in that. The next one, and if I don't explain it totally clearly. I have a grasp of it, but the way I've written it may be unclear. Employers who have multiple systems, i.e., the Health Science University and the Oregon University system, can maintain their choice. So they would have this new system, but they would also have the ability to retain their existing separate choice system that they currently have. The next point is under death benefit, and this is death benefit in terms of prior to retirement. We're talking about here somebody who has not retired and has designated a beneficiary, that it is as it is under the current system. And there are two parts to that. The first part is prior to vesting. There's one way that it's calculated, and after vesting, there is a different and separate calculation in how that's calculated. And that would be the same as it is under Tier 1 and Tier 2 currently. Next point, maintaining the current definitions of police and fire. Obviously, there are a number of factors that can drive up cost of a system, factors both ways. There was agreement over that the current definitions of who is in police and fire does not change in this new plan, with the exception of legislators. Excuse me. I should have lumped those two together.
You had to say that, didn't you?
Yeah. The next one, and this one took us some time, and I'm not sure that even after we explore where we're headed with this new plan, that this might not change slightly, because I don't know when you have a defined benefit plan, double lump sum, account balances, how you do that. But the general thrust of what we're trying to do here is that payment options at retirement, i.e. the 12 to 13 options that people have the ability to select now, full survivorship, 50% survivorship, 15 years certain, those kinds of things. We went through that list and said, is there anything that we can immediately get rid of right now because our plan design is different than the plan design of 1 and 2, or is there something that no one's interested in at this point? And at this point, we mutually agree that those options remain the same, the payout options under the survivor and other lump sum options. And again, I'm thinking through that, and there may still be one or two of those that doesn't make sense if it's this kind of a plan design versus what we have in 1 and 2. The last one that I'll mention is local governments that have their own retirement system are not forced into a new retirement system, and the example there is the City of Portland Police and Fire has their own system right now, so they would not be forced into this system. With that, then I'm going to skip over, and what I told you before, there were 17 items when I reported to you previously, and I was pretty close. There were 17 items that I just gave you, and that was off the top of my head from before. I told you there was approximately three to four items out still outstanding. That's what my list still contains. The one thing that I will tell you is that there has been discussion on all three or four, it kind of depends on how you group them, but all the items that are still outstanding, and there are proposals on the table that need to be priced out as to what the savings is, given the plan design that I've laid out to this point, given these proposals, so that both sides can see what the cost savings is or the additional cost of those particular pieces would be. And neither side was willing to put a stamp of approval on a plan until they saw what the actual costs of that system would be, and I think that is a rational approach, and I do appreciate the indulgence of the chair in this committee and the legislature as a whole in allowing us to go through that process of being able to price this out before we have our final discussion. The one additional thing that I will tell you, and I did mention in respect to a question that Representative McPherson posed to me when I reported to you last time, was is this group just simply talking about a successor plan, or are there other things on the table? And I want to make it very clear to this committee that we believe our charge was a successor plan. It was not more complicated than that. That is very complicated in itself. But the one additional thing that I will tell you is that we are still exploring other options that will incentivize people to move over from existing systems into a new system that has a benefit to the employee individually and at the same time has a benefit cost savings to the employer from where they are right now in Tier 1 and Tier 2. That issue is still on the table and is being further explored. And with that, I will complete my report, and if Jim has...
Mr. Chair, Jim Green, representing the employers at the table. The one other thing that Brian, that didn't make the list that we have agreed upon...
18, sorry.
There are 18, is that under the new system, there would be the use of updated mortality tables as those become available, not only for the member benefit, but also for any of the survivor benefits that are available in those different options, which I believe is part of the discussion with regard to the current system in 2004 in the Senate committee right now, but at least for this new system that we would be talking about, you would use updated mortality tables as those became available, as the actuary made those options available to the board.
Thank you, Jim. I stand corrected. There are 18 items. And with that, we would be open to any questions.
Questions? Representative Pearson.
Don't make it too hard. It's been a really tough week.
This isn't going to be too hard. Well, it may be, depending on what I hear here. The one that particularly surprised me was the pooling of employers, which, and I wanted to get a sense about how significant departure that would be from what the way the PERS system operates now, and in terms of the impact on local government contribution rates. I have the impression that there are employers that have maybe even a 10 percentage point swing in their percentage of payroll as a result of the current pooling structure. We could get a response to that from either or both.
Mr. Chairman, Representative McPherson, if you're asking what would be the difference versus what we have in the current system where you've got the schools over in one pool, the state and community colleges in one, and then these other local governments that have joined that pool, the difference and the belief, at least at the discussions around the table, if you're going to start a new system for new hires, you get everyone into the same pool, and then you won't have the argument and the fight amongst and between folks as to what's your rate and why is their rate different than our rate. And for everyone, except for the breakout of police and fire and general service, then you're going to have those differences. But at least the argument has been made and talked about with PERS that you get more rate stability with the pools, and the larger the pool, hopefully the greater the rate stability. That's one of the things we also want to have taken a look at, because if you have everybody into one pool, is there somebody subsidizing another? We don't believe so, but that's something that needs to be taken a look at.
Follow up if I could, Mr. Chair. Is there an involvement in the employer group, Mr. Green, from employers who, under the current system, are paying at a much lower rate? And I'm thinking, for example, of the OHSU, which has indicated to me that their rate is, employer portion is down around 7% of pay, I believe.
Mr. Chairman, Representative McPherson, while OHSU specifically is not at the table in this, there has been discussions about that because some of the folks, at least from the employer side, include cities and counties who are outside of the pool, didn't choose to join, and their rates in the current system are down because they are pre-funded. They have what they would call a cash carry forward into the system. But when you're talking about new hires, and we know, at least in the current system, that even those folks are going to experience some sort of UAL, and that UAL is going to continue to grow for them, and it's going to eat up that forward balance for them at some point, because we know we have another unfunded actuarial liability coming forward this year for almost every employer that sits out there, that by putting everyone into a pool, you're going to at least try to get the rate stability for everybody across the board. And what may happen, Representative McPherson, is once you make the choice currently to join that state and community college pool, that's an irrevocable decision. And once you're in, you're in. And some of these local governments that are sitting out there alone right now, they are lower than that rate. I would assume once they start to creep up towards that rate, they may take a look at joining that pool in order to get that stability that's there in the pools. And remember, the group I represent, schools and education service districts, have been in the pool ever since it was created, our pool. And we have one rate for everybody across the table, and that has helped us a lot with regard to the ability for us to have that stability. What does change is if you pay off some of your UAL. And we believe going forward, it should be everybody into one pool for that stability.
Mr. Chair, if I may, too, there was a note just passed up here. And obviously somebody who was at the table didn't think that I explained this particular piece well enough. So they wanted to take the opportunity to give me the note. It is, in fact, a design that has one plan, but in fact has two rate pools.
Yeah.
One is for police and fire, one's for general service. But when an employer sees what they're going to be paying, then, of course, those two will come together for that individual employer,
mm-hmm.
depending on how many they have in PNF and how many in general service.
Have you guys had any discussions as it relates to, since you're talking about a DB plan, and DB plans tend to have uncertainty as to their final cost or unfunded liability, and that's clearly what's sinking the current system. Have you talked about what you can do to cap or to keep an unfunded liability from blowing a hole in a new system?
Mr. Chair, without giving you the whole slide of what the additional elements that are out on the table, obviously that is a concern from both sides. And let me tell you, there has been discussions about how do you stabilize a rate in a new plan, how do you design a new plan so that there isn't a rate fluctuation up or down that creates a problem for the future. I think there are a couple answers that I can give you. One is the simplicity of this plan without the additional bells and whistles that we've talked about is one way, because obviously one of the major drivers of unfunded liability on the upward trend we found is the money match. So yes, we've had that discussion and money match is off the table. Are there other things that we've discussed or are discussing that in fact create a dynamic in which you have a much smaller bandwidth in which the rate's going to fluctuate? We believe so. But we are currently getting information. We got some information this morning about if we assumed different rates of return than the current accepted rate of return, what would that do to the rate on the upside and on the downside? And we now have an understanding within a particular rate band of what the potential for lowering the rate is or the rate going up based upon rates of return. And, of course, that's only one factor. But, yes, we're asking questions about all of those. So we've had the discussion. We think that there is a distinct possibility in designing a new plan that you will mitigate the possibility of big swings, with one caveat, obviously, is that the only thing that you can't control is the investment gains. And so within that and the statement that I made about assumed rate of return over an extended period of time, we've had that discussion, but the short-term rate of returns, we don't have control over that. So we've accepted that we don't have control over that, and we've looked more at the longer term.
And Mr. Chairman, I think you get kind of at the crux of the issues that are left to be determined in those discussions, and those are the ones that we're waiting to see some pricing on, I guess would be, lack of a better term, the pricing on it, and how you do, in fact, come to some resolution of try to get your hands around the fluctuation we've seen in the current system that we have. And those are issues that are very difficult when you get down to the brass tacks of negotiating what may or may not be in the system. And obviously, I think both sides are aware of what's gone on in the current system and are trying to put some parameters on it. It just, where do the numbers fall?
The one additional thing that I would say, Mr. Chair, is, and I've told this committee this before on behalf of the employees, that the employees of this state are totally committed to the stability of the PERS system, and in the design of a new system, that is an issue that we take very seriously, and I've committed to you, and we've talked about it. But we are very concerned, and we have had discussions about what is the probability or possibility of unfunded liabilities or swings up in rates.
So we need information about cost differences on disability and whether or not that's work-related or job or off-duty related. And I believe that PERS can provide that information for you. Is there anything that you wish directly to ask of them? Because I'm looking for a timeline. I do not want to, and I'm not suggesting that anybody's stalling, but we can't delay this. And we need to have productive meetings, and there is an urgency about this and it must move forward. So if it can't move forward by next week, you know, we're going to have to move on with, you know, with either with a different plan or with another bill until you can come to a conclusion. So I'm suggesting that we get that information as quick as possible. Jim, are you, you want to come up here for a minute?
Mr. Chairman, we can appreciate that. And we're at the point now where it's going to be down to the pricing of the proposals that are on the table, and we understand that. We hope to have this finished by next week and complete the discussions, and either we're going to come to an agreement or we're not going to come to an agreement.
Oh.
And all we would ask is that that we have the availability of PERS and their expertise in taking a look at the different options that we've laid on the table.
Okay. Well, today was the deadline for the report, and I'm not hoping to have it done. It's either going to be done or we're moving on next week, because we simply just can't delay. And by moving on, I mean we're going to have to come up with another plan, or we're going to have to you know, figure this out amongst the legislature if you guys can't come to agreement. Jim, is there anything that you can see that any delay that would take us beyond next week in terms of numbers as it relates to disability or any of these other issues that you couldn't run within a week?
Mr. Chair, it takes about 48 to 72 hours to run a pricing, that is to calculate normal costs through the actuary's model. So, and what we would need to do that would be a fully specified plan. For example, was disability in or was disability going to be handled separately? The formulas, if it's fully vetted out in terms of specificity. I actually talked to the actuary this morning, and they're pretty swamped because there are other people working on additional plans and thoughts as well. But I believe that if we can work together and make sure that sort of all of the necessary elements are checked off, we can do that. I would, for just for information purposes, I think that our colleagues know that the current death and disability normal cost is about 0.9% on of payroll, and the disability part of that is about 0.75%. So it'll give you some sense of, and that's of normal cost. So that's of about 16.5% or 16.75%.
Say that again. Death and disability is 0.9%.
Death and disability coverage, those benefits that are associated with that package, which are death, duty disability, and non-duty disability, are about 0.9% a 0.9 percentage point of the 16.75 normal cost of the current plan. You know, it's a notable item, but I think it's up to people designing particular plans as to whether or not they want that cost in or addressed separately.
Jim, you said, and disability is 0.3 of that?
Yeah, the 0.75 percentage points of the 9, of the 16.75 is just associated with disability.
And do you have that broken out into work-related versus off the job?
I do, Mr. Chair. 0.63 is non-duty and 0.14 is duty disability.
Okay. Thank you.
So we stand ready to help them. They've been asking a number of questions, and we've tried to turn them around as fast as we can.
And, Mr. Chairman, those plans are ready to go.
Well, and those need to be given to Jim today to begin that model run, and we've got Friday, Monday, Tuesday. That's 72 hours. I don't know if you can get to it that quick, but, you know, Thursday would have to be a final deadline, and I'm going to, because we can't delay any further, I'm going to put House Bill 2003 up for hearing on Tuesday, since we probably won't have information back. If we have information back on this, I'm happy to hear it. So all three of those bills will be on the schedule for Tuesday.
May I speak?
You may. Representative Richardson, question.
Mr. Chair, yes, Mr. DeLashman and Mr. Green, I just, as a member of the committee, want to make sure that everyone understands that, one, we're very grateful for the time you're putting in, and two, the recommendations are merely a recommendation to the committee. For instance, you said, number one, you've agreed to a defined benefit plan, and yet that may or may not be the ultimate way that the committee goes, because of the uncertainty that a defined benefit plan has for the employers with the future as far as life expectancy, the cost, the amount of risk that puts on employers versus employees. And so even though you've got 18 out of 20 issues decided, if you get the other two, that is information for the committee, but it doesn't mean it's a done deal. Am I correct, Mr. Chair?
I don't think anybody on the committee can say that they're going to accept something that they haven't seen or don't know the cost to. And so, you know, we're happy to, again, to see if you can come to a conclusion. It seems to me that the issues left are the big ones. They are essentially what's going to drive the cost of the system, and the key factor of any system, as I've said, is it has to be sustainable and affordable. And it's got to be something that the people of Oregon can afford, and as I think I've made clear, the current system I don't think is either sustainable or affordable into the future, and that's why we're looking at a new system. So the savings have to be there. Representative McPherson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to add a comment in here at this point. I wanted to applaud the work that the employer and employee groups have been doing, and I think that Representative Richardson is correct that this committee and the legislature generally holds the ultimate responsibility for putting in place what we need to have, but it's very helpful to have this kind of work having been done so that we can understand how the stakeholders feel about some key issues. I mean, I found out some things here that are very useful to my thinking on the process. To indicate something I've indicated to a number of you individually, I'm pleased to see that a defined benefit plan is a key feature of what's set out here, because I think that ultimately the reliability of benefits for our public employees depends on having a defined benefit structure. So I applaud that element, recognizing that that's going to be one perspective within a committee that has maybe a range of perspectives within it. And I would also say that I think that the success of this effort ought not be judged on whether or not there's some ultimate resolution on financial terms. I would say just the report we've received today, I think, is a very successful outcome from the work that's been done. If there's more progress that the employers and the employee groups can make in terms of shaping a consensus up that they described to us, that's great too. But I think even this report is very helpful, so I appreciate that work.
And Mr. Chairman, the idea of affordability and the expectation that this system have some containment on it is obviously one that both sides have talked about, and it's one that was high on our list when we testified as employers to a successor system. And to Representative Richardson's comments, I have several members in my own group of school boards that would probably hang me from the highest tree coming back with a defined benefit plan, as it's been relayed to you right now. But there are other things that are on the table to be considered. And as we move forward in this process, as much as I would like to spend more hours with my good friends from the other side of the table, I think we're coming quickly to the conclusion of we got to just see the pricing and see where we're ultimately at. We've spent 12, 14?
Well, in actual meetings, slightly less than that, but in discussions about it and reports back, it's been at least that much. So it's been pretty all-consuming over the last week.
Because while we're at the table, we also have the larger constituencies that we represent we also have to go back to. So it's been a process, to say the least.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Kind of tongue-in-cheek remark. Representative McPherson sees the glass half full. I'm sitting here saying, man, it's really half empty. I expected these brilliant people to come forward, take care of all the UAL, and balance the state's budget at the same time, and they didn't do it.
We tried.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Jim.
Brian, did you have a comment?
No.
Anyone else? All right. Thank you.
Thank you for the opportunity to work through the process.
Don't give up. Don't stop.
Anybody else wishing to testify today on 2008 or 2020? Close the hearing in House Bill 2008. Close the hearing in House Bill 2020. Committee members, as I mentioned, can't delay anymore. I am putting House Bill 2003 up on the agenda for Tuesday, along with these two plans. And I know Kara is working on a section-by-section dissection of House Bill 2003, which I believe has 40 sections. and she's doing the English version as opposed to the legalese version, which Representative McPherson understands, Representative Richardson understands, and the rest of us will read the English version. So thank you, committee members. Appreciate your help, and thank you to the employers and the employees. Committee adjourned.